Thank you, everyone, and good morning. I'm a computer scientist by training, so today I would like to talk a little bit about some applications of social computing, collaborative computing, social networks, and I think it's nicely fitting in the theme of the workshop and also of the semester program here. First, let me introduce my group, if I may. I'm at Indiana University and in the School of Informatics, and we have two departments there, Department of Informatics and Department of Computer Science, and I have a joint appointment in both, and in particular I'm in a complex systems group there. And so these are some colleagues, some of them are here, and students in complex systems, and also in my group that is called Networks and Agents Network. So all the work that I'm going to talk about today involves heavy collaboration with many of these people, even if I don't acknowledge each one by name. And in particular, I'll talk about two applications, two systems. One is called GivenLink, and the other one is called SIGCESS. And they're quite different, so I'll spend about half time on each, and we'll have some time for questions in the middle. And if there is time left at the end, we can do a little bit of demos, if you are interested. So let me start with GivenLink, and I should say that this is work done with my students Ben Martinez, Amira Stoilova, Heather Roynestad, Mike Conover, and Justin Donaldson, who's here, there. So, GivenLink, let me try to use some pictures to illustrate the idea here. Imagine that we have lots of resources, and this could be anything. They could be websites, they could be songs, multimedia, pages, documents, etc. And so just anything that has a URL, basically, to keep things practical. And the idea here is that we want people to cooperatively build a semantic network between these resources. We're thinking about very simple semantic network. We're not thinking about sort of higher level logic the way that some of the semantic web projects are going after. So simple things like, are these two things related? Are they about the same thing? And so the idea is that by people submitting somehow links between objects, we can then leverage socially all these contributions and try to extract some sort of semantic relationships between these objects. Now, once you have something like this, what can you do with it? Well, one thing that you can do is recommendation. So suppose that the system knows that you like, the Beatles, it may recommend you may also like it. Yeah, suppose that you have Beatles are here, and the system knows, because you've donated a folder or bookmark about that, that it should be able to figure out, well, you might also be interested in the Rolling Stones or the Pink Floyd or something like that. Or you can do search. Likewise, if you submit a query, the system might give you something that is related to that query, and it could be related for different reasons. In this example, it might be a movie with the same director or a movie about the same genre or something like that. Okay. So that's sort of a very general introduction of the idea. This is actually what the website looks like if you go there, givenlink.org. And when you log in, if you've submitted some bookmarks, the system will try to make some suggestions, some recommendations of things that you may not know about, but that may be related to what you're interested in. And actually, the engine behind this leverages some notion of indirect similarity and novelty that was developed by Luis Rocha here. Later in this workshop, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But you can see here, for example, that the kind of recommendations that I get are about nerd stuff, which is actually appropriate for me. There's other stuff that you may find familiar, like tags and top things. But there's, the heart of this is the applications here, and I'll tell you about something about the application. So you can search the system, you can submit a URL and get similar things, you can submit some query, you can do personalized search, look for surprising things that you might be interested in, but you might some of the ideas, the application that we have in mind when we build this system.
Okay.
So, a little bit more about the sort of underlying motivation of this system. I like to think of sort of two major revolutions in the brief history of the web. Okay, when the web first started, we basically had a very simple notion of relationships between terms and pages. And a lot of the talks that we've seen here today, starting with Andrews and several others yesterday, are telling us that there's a lot of interesting stuff that you can do with this. So the relationship is a document contains, you know, terms, and terms are containing documents, and you can do lots of stuff with that. In fact, we have a field of information retrieval that has, you know, been around for several decades. And the whole first generation of search engines was based on that. And there was a lot of good things that worked there that we're still using today in every search engine. Now, on one hand, I want to highlight the fact that the relationship was between terms and keywords. And on the other hand, I was highlight the social relationship. An author was in charge of an object. So you wrote the page. You were the only person who could have an impact on that page. Okay? And so that's clean and simple. So in my opinion, the first revolution that happened was when we realized that links had something useful. And let's get the next slide. Okay, so we started paying attention to the fact that these pages link to each other, hyperlinks. And that's when Google, you know, became very, very popular. In my opinion, the major contribution was that it leveraged links as an additional source of information, not just the content of pages, but also the links between pages. Well, links are sort of a first crude example of social annotation, right? Because even though I can only affect my own page, by putting a link to your page, I am in some sense annotating your page. I'm saying something about your page. I don't know what it is that I'm saying. Maybe I'm just saying it's interesting, or maybe I'm saying it sucks, but I'm saying something about it. And if lots of people point to your page, well then, your page somehow becomes more important. So it's a form of endorsement. And so it's a form of social annotation, right? I can affect somebody else's page. And in fact, that's the second revolution, in my opinion, the one that is happening now that I'm very excited about, and it is social search, social search engines, social computing, etc. When we realize that there are lots of these kind of social annotations, not just hyperlinks, even things that are more direct. I can directly vote for a page. I can vote for an item. I can collaboratively edit the content of that item, as we do in Wikipedia. I can tag things. Lots of people can say what a thing is about by tagging it, and then that gives us a social description of that object. So there are different social mechanisms here, and I think of them as different social annotation mechanisms. Collaborative editing, collaborative linking, collaborative tagging, etc. So bookmarking, you know, delicious is one that these are all popular, we're all familiar with all of them, but there are hundreds of these kinds of websites, and tagging is probably the most popular and so far well better studied mechanism of social annotation. Okay, so what we want to do when give a link is try to put together these two things, okay? We want to have these social annotation where an author is able to somehow affect resources that don't belong to that author, okay? Everybody can say something about others, and just like in these sites. But what we want to be able to annotate is not just the object, as in all of these sites, but the relationships themselves, okay? I want to be able to say something about the relationship between two objects. And that's what hyperlinks do in a very crude way, right? You put a link from one page to another, you're saying that there's some sort of relationship between them. But it's intended to be just navigational, although we can extract some semantic information from them, and we want to go further and say, really, we want to allow people to say that these two things are related, beyond just putting a link from one to the other. So in a sense, we want to try to explore this idea of annotating relationships. At least this is sort of a big idea. And Andrew.
So is this related to the goals of Google Co-op? Which doesn't seem to be taking off in my
I have to confess that I don't know enough about that. I remember reading something about it some time ago. Yes, please.
Basically, I can just comment on it.
Yes.
Google Co-op uses your expertise. If I subscribe
yes.
to you and your rank, your list of items that you like, to re-rank my search results. So somehow
yes.
If I subscribe to you, then your subscription will affect my ranking.
Yes. Now,
that's not really. It's not really kind of semantically marked up stuff. I mean, it's
no.
based on the ranking of web pages. It just modifies the original
right.
page rank.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. And thank you for asking that question and reminding me about it. There is clearly a relationship, because in both cases you have a sort of a social collaboration. Although we're going at it in a more direct way. I mean, in a sense, we're really asking people to tell us. Not indirectly through other people, you know. Not. We're not asking people to somehow leverage the social relationships through the people, but we're going directly through the objects. Okay. Anyway, let me go to a more concrete description, so we'll have something much more concrete to talk about. And at this point, I should take a digression and thank the organizers for organizing a meeting last night between some of the participants here. And Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt last night at the Westin here. So yes, it was really nice how you organized that. It worked really well. So anyway, going back to the talks, let me illustrate Duolink by using two prototypical users. These are two users of Duolink, Angelina and Brad. And they, of course, have bookmarks. So let's say that Angelina uses bookmarks, and let's say that Brad uses tags, for example. He's a division teacher. So she may have categories or folders or classes, whatever you want to call them. So she may have, for example, this particular URL organized under the news heading, and AAAI URL organized under the research folder. And let's say that Brad also has the same two resources annotated among others, and let's say that he just has a fun tag and has tags both with that same word. So the idea is that we want to somehow extract automatically some semantic relationship from these kinds of annotations, because we don't want really people to do extra work and come to our website and say this is related to this. We're happy if they just sort of somehow donate to us or share with the community something that they already are doing. Perhaps their own selfish organizations of bookmarks in bookmarks, if they use bookmarks or tags, whatever. So we want to leverage stuff that is already out there. So what does this tell us about the relationship between these resources? So for example, it might tell us that Angelina is interested in both of these things. Okay, so that's a very weak kind of relationship. Angelina puts them in different categories. There's nothing shared between them. But there is sort of a collaborative filtering aspect, that there is one person interested in both of those things. And that may have a weak, but may perhaps non-zero signal of relationship. If lots of people are interested in the same two things, perhaps there's something there. Well, in fact, that's exactly the foundation of collaborative filtering. And so we think that there may be a signal there. On the other hand, Brad gives us a stronger signal, because he says, well, these two things really are about the same thing. They have the same tag, or they're in the same category. So we get a stronger similarity message. And then we simply aggregate, okay? We just aggregate across all the users. So if each user gives us some sort of measure of semantic similarity between each pair of objects, then we aggregate across the users, and we get some sort of a social emergent measure of similarity. So that's the basic idea here. And of course, there's lots of details, but this is really the basic idea. Any questions? Okay. Oh yes. we went to have dinner at a restaurant there, and they had the opening of Beowulf, a new movie with Angelina Jolie, and so there was a crowd of fans waiting, and so finally all the stars came, and some conference participants fainted. Some great pictures were taken. So, yeah, it was fun. Okay, so this is sort of one kind of measure that we have been exploring to try to extract this kind of semantic similarity. This is actually an extension of a measure proposed by Lin which is a well kind of understood information theoretic measure for trees, okay? So basically, if you have a hierarchical organization of objects, and objects are stored in the nodes of a tree, not necessarily the leaves, then you can define quite well a similarity between these objects by looking at the entropy of each node. And so obviously, if two things are in the same category, they're very similar. If they're in categories that contain lots of objects, well, then you have less information, more entropy, and so on and so forth. This is just one measure, and it assumes this hierarchical distribution. So for example, this measure breaks in the case of tags. So for tags, we're looking at something slightly different. In fact, we're trying to generalize this measure to something that works equally well. In fact, to something that sort of degenerates to this in the case of a hierarchical structure, but to something that is appropriate for tags in the case of a tag structure. So we want to come up with some sort of more generalized version of similarity that applies to both hierarchical organization of networks and non-hierarchical. Because some people really like their bookmarks organized hierarchically in their browsers, and other people really don't. They just really like a flat sort of space of tags, and it makes more sense for them. So we want something that works well in both cases. Did you have a question? Yeah.
Just a technical question. Right now, there's many more pages than internet users.
Yes.
So, and I'm not even talking about pairs of people,
yes.
Websites.
Yes.
I'm wondering what this is going, because you might have significant information for maybe a million sites, but.
Absolutely. This is definitely true, and we're certainly not proposing that this should somehow replace other things. We want to see, can this give a signal that is useful for recommendation, for searching, for ranking, and of course you would still continue to use things that you already have. Of course there's an issue of critical mass, in fact I was going to mention it later, but even if you do have critical mass, even the most successful systems like Delicious, still they have a number of users which is almost insignificant compared to all the numbers of users of the internet. In fact, one of our ideas is, in fact, we want to allow people, there are even more people who bookmark pages than people who tag pages, right? So we should get that if we can. But there's still going to be a density issue, and this probably is going to only tell us information about things that are widely used or popular and less about things that nobody knows. But there might be something that, that a small group of experts perhaps is interested in, and maybe there is a consensus about those things, but it maybe doesn't quite raise to the level of the global population. So if you think of popularity-based methods, for example, PageRank ranking, it works really well, but it does give you sort of it amasses the consensus of the entire crowd. So something that only a few mathematicians, let's say, are interested in, probably will not bubble up to the top. And whereas in a social system, you might say, well, other users like me are interested in this. So there are pros and cons. Clearly, this is this is just one thing. Yeah. Okay. So without going too much in the details of this, I'll just give you a couple small details, small tricks. So I mentioned collaborative filtering in the sense that I want to be able to extract some information from Angelina, even though about the similarity between these two things, even though they're in different categories. Well, if you directly apply Lin's measure from the previous slide, it turns out that this is zero, because it looks like the log of the likelihood of the lowest common ancestor. The lowest common ancestor is the root, so probability is one, log is zero, and as it makes sense in the information theoretic sense, if what they share with each other is they both exist, then there's no information there. So one way to get around that, and it's a hack, and it's not something that necessarily we're wed to, but something that we've used until now, is to add a super user. Okay, so we just imagine that there is some root that is above all the users' roots, and then it will turn out that if you apply that Lin similarity measure, the similarity between these two objects is going to be small but not zero, because the lowest common ancestor is not the actual root. And another thing that we deal with is the fact that a lot of people keep their bookmarks unorganized. They may not have tags, or they may be just in a flat list. And in those cases, you would think, oh, these looks really related to each other because they're in the same folder, right? But in fact, they're not. They're just unorganized. So there's a simple hack to deal with that, and we just put them in their own
folders containing nothing else, and that's one way to get them to get a very small non-zero similarity. And these are kind of hacks, and we're looking at lots of different measures, but you know, just to give you an idea. The important thing is that once you put it together, all of this information, what you get is a network. It is in an undirected weighted network where nodes are resources and edges are these social measures of similarity between these resources. And just as a parenthesis, I want to say that you could look at the dual space, you know, in a tagging space, you have resources, but you also have tags. So actually, almost, although I'm not going to go into that in this talk, the representation of tags as a function of resources is perfectly dual in a model that we're looking at right now. So you could likewise make a semantic network of tags based on shared resources and so on and so forth. But anyway, I'll just talk about the relationships between resources today. So when you look at this network, you could ask the classic question, you know, we've talked about lots of social networks here, what kind of network is it? So one thing that you can look for example is, you know, is it a small world, is it a scale-free distribution? And because it is a weighted network, one way to look at it is say, well, let's throw away the weights and just imagine that this is just an unweighted network and look at the topology of it. When you do that, the degree distribution that you get is exponential, which is this curve here. Out of battery, that's okay. This curve here. And that's kind of like the typical signature of a random network. On the other hand, if you threshold the weights, if you say I only keep the weights above some threshold, Drago yesterday was talking about this kind of approach for lexical networks, same idea, if you only take the higher similarities. Well, it turns out that irrespective of the threshold, as long as you throw away the lowest ones, the noise, that there is a phase transition to a structure of the network that becomes scale-free. And you see that in a log block space, the degree distribution is it looks like a line. So, and that's more like the signature of most social networks that we're familiar with. And in fact, once you do that, if you then draw the network and look at the clusters, you can see emergent clusters that are semantically meaningful. This is based on the data that we acquired in the first few months of the system, where most of the donors were computer science graduate students. So you can see a little bit of bias in the topics. But you can really see that sort of the clusters somehow mirror semantic relationships. Okay, so what do you do with this network once you have it? Well, one thing that you could do is search, right? So you could say, all right, give me things that are related to CNN.com. And you get results like these. You know, BBC News, UCLA. So it seems to work pretty well. So what we did is we ran a user study to evaluate the system, because we're interested in rigorous evaluation, after all, like everybody else. And we needed to compare it with something. So we compared it with the Google-related service, because it was easy, and Google allows us to do it with the API. And so, but there was a problem when you compare kind of a system like this, which at the time of testing only had a minuscule number of donated links, something in the order of 40,000. And then we went and compared it with something that has, you know, 10 billion things. It's obviously it's very hard because most likely Google has a lot more relevant stuff than we know about. So there is the problem of how to compare apples and oranges. And what we did is we dealt with size by trying to normalize for the size of the collections. Okay, so clearly Give a Link has a very 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 small coverage here. Google has a huge coverage. And so to try to discount the issue of coverage, we try to say, well, let's only consider among the sites that the users tell us that are related, okay, only the ones that both systems know about. So we only look at the small subset that is shared by Give a Link and by Google. So in this evaluation, clearly we're penalizing Google a lot. We're not really being very fair to Google. But the point here is not to be fair to Google, it's to try to get some sort of evaluation that tells us something useful. Otherwise, it would be completely useless. So clearly, this is going to be throwing away a lot of good stuff that Google gives us. But at least we can compare apples and apples. And when we do that, this is a precision recall plot. How many people are familiar with precision recall plots? OK, not everybody. So very briefly, a precision recall plot has on the x-axis what we call recall, which is the fraction of all the things that users tell us are related that the system actually gives you, returns.
And precision is the fraction of things that the system returns that the users tell us that are relevant. Okay? These are standard measures used in information retrieval. So in a precision recall plot, the ideal system would have a line that is sort of up towards that top right corner, and then eventually goes down here. So top right, better. And in this system, we were happy that given link seemed to return results that were quite nice. It seemed to be Google-related service. If you're wondering why this point at 0, 0, it's just because at that time, and we think that it has changed since, the Google-related service always returned as the first hit the query itself. And the users never clicked on that to say that this was relevant because they already knew about it. So in a sense, the Google-related service, maybe it wasn't exactly a recommendation system, so the comparison wasn't completely fair. But in any case, because the first hit was always deemed by the users irrelevant, you know, that's why you get this 0.1. But it's not really important. But the point is that, you know, it seems to give this sort of semantic similarity leveraging the, you know, the opinions of the collective of users seem to give us a good measure of relatedness. So we were at least reassured by this enough to continue going in the project. So what are some of the things that we're looking at right now? The first one is, well, once we have this network, what can we do with it in addition to the directed similarity measures? What other interesting things we can do with it? For example, we can look at measures of centrality or prestige. For example, in Google, PageRank has worked really, really well at identifying important things as those that are central according to the PageRank measure. Well, what does that correspond to in a weighted undirected network? Well, you can, of course, there are lots and lots of different measures of centrality, some of which have been talked about at this workshop yesterday, and we'll hear about more in the rest of the week. You have measures of centrality based on shortest paths, which are particularly expensive, so we weren't particularly interested in them. And there are much simpler things. For example, this is something that would be the equivalent of PageRank, but really you don't even need the jumping parameter in PageRank that you have in PageRank, because in an undirected network you have no convergence problems. And it turns out that if you remove that, then PageRank simply becomes strength, and strength is simply the sum of the similarities of an object to its neighbors. So the sum of these weights. That's a really, really simple measure. It's very efficient, very easy to compute. So that's something that we're orienting ourselves towards right now. And this could be used as an additional aid in ranking results. Of course, this kind of measure of centrality also is a measure of generality, if you think about it. Because something very central also means something very general, because it's related to everything. So it may not be appropriate in all instances. It may be appropriate in some cases, not in others. So this is something we're interested in looking at, measures of centrality. Another one is measures that can be useful in ranking. And I mentioned earlier the novelty engine, where you the system can recommend some things that you may not know about that may be related. And here we're working, as I mentioned before, with Luis Rocha, who has developed this this theory of semi-metric spaces. And the idea here, if I can illustrate it with the drawing instead of the equation, is that you may have two objects that are not very similar to each other, okay? They have a small weight between them, but they may be very similar to a third object, okay? So it may look like if you go through this third object, these two things are very related to each other, but if you go directly from one to the other, it wouldn't seem that way. And there are lots of different ways to do this. You can, again, transform similarities into distances. You can look at indirect paths. You can look at paths of arbitrary lengths, or you can look at just short paths like triangles, which is cheaper, more efficient to compute. You can do, again, complicated things based on shortest paths. You can do simpler, more aggressive things, looking at just the ratio between indirect similarity and direct similarity, which is what we're looking into right now because it's cheap and it seems to work well. But basically, if something if two things seem much more related to each other going through a third object than going directly, this tells us that most users don't really know about the relationship between these two objects, right? Because they haven't really told us that they're related. But users tell us that they may be indirectly related. So this may be a good recommendation to make. It may be something novel that users didn't already know about. So that's something else we're looking at. One more thing is personalization.
So see, if we know what Angelina is interested in, we could use this, and this is probably more towards towards what we were talking about earlier with Google system. We could look at knowing that to bias the ranking of objects. Okay, so if we have a recommendation for something that seems to be particularly similar to something else that this user is interested in, then we might sort of bias the ranking in favor of that object. So we're looking at this to look at personalization. Naturally, you need to discount things that you know everybody has, but they're not really interesting. Like, okay, everybody in their bookmarks has, you know, a link to their browser, for example. Well, that's not particularly useful. So you can use things like inverse document frequency. We talked about it yesterday, to discount things that are not really that meaningful. Okay. And the last thing that we're looking at is actually the project that Justin is involved in, and it's a navigation interface. There have been lots of attempts in search engines to look at alternative interfaces. Right now, what seems to work best is the rank list. And we've had lots of people who have looked at alternative approaches, and generally these alternative approaches have failed. They look cool, but after a while, people say, I'll stick with my old rank list. And we want, yeah?
What's the reason for that, you think?
Why they stick with the old list? Oh, yeah, thank you. That's exactly what I was saying. We hypothesize, and we don't know if this is true, this is a research question we're trying to explore. We hypothesize that part of the reason for that may not just be the fact that people really like the rank list, but that perhaps we didn't have good ways to represent the relationships between these objects. Okay? So suppose that we don't really have a very good way to lay out objects that are related to each other. Well, then clearly trying to put them some way using some clustering algorithm. If the clustering algorithm itself is not very good, then the layout is not going to be very helpful. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that really there may be a user issue and you know, people really, no matter how good the layout is, they're going to prefer the list. So to answer this particular question, we want to say, well, let's see if this particular similarity measure can yield a useful layout for navigation. This is, in my opinion, an empirical question. So we're running an experiment. Yeah.
The TagCloud has been very successful, and it's very different than than the rank list.
You're right. TagCloud has been very successful in the community of users of tagging bookmarks. So I agree, and in fact, we're looking at that as well. I don't know whether that would be exported to the broad community of web users. You know, I mean, we have hundreds of millions of web users versus hundreds of thousands of TagCloud users. So it's not really yet completely clear how that will export. But I think that's also a very interesting, exciting direction. In fact, we're doing something with that as well. So that's a good point. But it's different. That's very biased towards popularity, which can be very, very useful. This would be more biased towards a semantic relationship between objects. So what we're doing right now is, well, we have a service. GivenLink, basically, it's a simple RSS, you know, REST service, like an API, where you can give two URLs and it'll give you back the similarity between them. And so Justin is building an interface on top of that, where when you get a bunch of hits from the search engine, we're laying them out so that similar things will tend to be closer together. And so we want to run an experiment to see whether that would give us good results. And we're about to launch that, hopefully in the next few days. Okay. So to summarize, we clearly, as any other social engine, this leverages contributions of users, so one issue is critical mass. We want to get lots of people to donate their tags or their bookmarks, and the more data we have, the better it will work. So one thing that we're doing is developing a bookmark manager to make it convenient, to make people interested in using the system that spans different social sites and ours. We want to make it easy for people to donate their bookmarks, no matter what other system they're using to organize them, whether it's Delicious or something else. We're doing lots of those things to try to address the critical mass issue. We're also developing a game, for example. sort of like the ESP game, if anybody's familiar with that, to let people have fun with this, make some guesses, which of these things are related, you know, find a common tag, that kind of thing, to facilitate this issue of density that you alluded to earlier. So there's some interesting things here. There's the collaborative filtering issue. We're studying whether it is in fact useful to use that, which is something that is not done in other social bookmarking systems. The fact that this can work to give us some data even for things that are not linked. So for example, a crawler couldn't possibly find them. In this is not different from, of course, other social bookmarking sites. And likewise, that can be used to tag or categorize any objects, even if they're not text-based. There's some issues that we're trying to deal with. They're interesting research problems, the issue of scalability. We want to have measures that you don't have to recompute the whole thing each time. A lot of these algorithms are very complex. We're talking with pairs, so very easily we get into quadratic algorithms that break everything. There's the issue of density I alluded to. And then, of course, there's the issue of spam. Coincidentally, just this morning, I got an email when I woke up from some person who had emailed the president of our university saying, you're aiding and abetting paper mills, for students who plagiarize stuff, which certainly is not something we want to do. But the point is spam, right? Any system, when it becomes visible, there's the issue of spam. And so like every other system, we have to deal with spam. OK, so that's the end of what I wanted to say about give a link. And is there any other questions? Yes. And then I'm going to move to the next one.
Using triple store technology, or what's your?
So far, we're not. But we're moving in that direction. Very good question.
What are you using?
Relational
database?
I'm going to take that offline because it would be a long discussion of technical issues.
In terms of scalability, though.
Yeah, right now we have lots of issues. Yeah. So that's why we're moving away from what we're doing right now and towards something simpler and more scalable.
Yeah.
And especially, at the heart of it is the similarity of computation, which has to be incremental, basically.
You use memoization techniques, though?
No.
The pre-computed things and using the computations.
We're using some of those things, but right now everything is breaking up because basically the LIM measure that I was showing you earlier, because of the collaborative filtering aspect, this super node on top is making the measure non-incremental. So basically everything becomes very inefficient.
Yeah.
So right now we're in the middle of moving away into a system that will be much more nimble and hopefully still have perhaps even better. So we're in the middle of evaluating these different similarity measures that are scalable. And then, of course, there's the implementation issues. But
we deal with these issues, so we should talk about it.
Okay, very, very happy to do that during the break. Thank you.
Yeah,
so those are very important questions. Yeah?
I just have a comment. You had trust in there. There's a company called eOpinions.
Oh, eOpinions, yeah.
They actually have the concept called a web of trust.
Yes.
In fact, they have a patent on it.
Yes.
But I looked at it, and it's similarly to a weighted graph. They have links which are weighted based on who trusts whom, and if more people trust you. And
yes.
So on and so forth.
Yeah. This is definitely an important issue for all recommendation systems, shielding and so on. So yeah, we're familiar with some of those, and in fact, I have a student who specifically intending to write his thesis on that kind of issue. How would you sort of defend? Not just give a link, but in general, social systems in a general way from abuses of various kinds, building a trust-based system. In fact, the next topic, success, has exactly the same issue, and in fact, we're looking into that as well. So these issues of trust are, I put it under the good because I think that you can leverage, and I think this is what you're hinting at, you can leverage some of the stuff to build a good trust measure. But also, you could think of it as a challenge. You need that to combat this, so it's an important issue. Yeah, thank you. All right, so next I want to talk a little bit more quickly about success. And this is work done mostly by my graduate students, Li Xinwu and Ruud Akhavipat. Also, Anna McWhitman has collaborated with us in the past. Okay, so I would invite you to go to this website. Write it down right now. Come on, I know you've got your laptops. I know. The success, we're trying to register some domain, but most of the good ones are gone. So anyway, If you go there, you can download an application called 6S, and you can run it. And the first thing you run it, first time you run it, it'll ask you, well, you know, what do you want to, is there some information you want to index? And you can push a button that says, just do it for me. I don't want to know anything about it. So it'll use some smart crawling techniques. It'll index your bookmarks. It'll use them as starting points for a topical crawl that uses some queries that you've submitted to search engines in the past to try to bias the crawl towards things that you may be interested in. And it'll build a collection, and it'll build an index of that collection, and then you can search through it. So far, nothing special. I mean, this is pretty much equivalent to the functionality that you get from desktop search tools, like you can get from Google, from Microsoft, from Yahoo, and also from your operating system. So nothing special there. All right. But then we also have a little browser extension. You can see it right up there, 6S. So instead of searching Google, you could search 6S. And what happens when you do that? Well, you get a bunch of results, and you can see that these results are going towards a local search service that is running when you run this application. And of course, it looks through your bookmarks or through your index. There's nothing special there. In fact, right here, I have no example of those. But if you get a hit that is from you, it'll say mine or something like that. But also, as you can see, it gives you back stuff that is coming from other contributors. So what's happening there? So for example, I searched for web mining here, and I got some results from this guy, you know, WLS Angel number 3. What is this? And this is a collaborative or cooperative distributed search. So let me tell you what's under the hood. Under the hood is a peer-based system. And roughly, it works like this. So let's say that you are some node, and you're running 6S. So that means that you have some index built by the peer by looking at local storage, user-submitted local documents from the local disk, your bookmarks, web crawl, and so on and so forth. So user A submits a query, and the query goes to other peers over the network. Okay? So let's say that it goes to B, and then B submits the query to some other peer, C. And then let's say that C has some good result for your query, and so it sends it back to B, and B sends it back to you. So now you've got a result. Well, this result is from C. Who knows if it's good or not? It would be nice to have a system that learns whether C gives you good results or not. And one important thing is that B has a lot to learn here, right? B is the intermediary. B learns what A is interested in. B learns what C knows about. So there's a lot of interesting social web mining kind of opportunities here, in my view, where each user can learn about a lot about the other users by sort of monitoring the traffic that goes over this peer network. And we want to do that and leverage that to make this network into a functional semantic collaborative network. So for example, after some interactions of this kind, A should learn that B has good results, if that's the case. And so next time, A should send the query directly to C instead of going through B. So you can see that the topology of this network should change over time. As users learn about each other, and in theory at least, this is what we want to explore and study, we want to see whether this network becomes, the topology of the network becomes biased by a semantics in such a way that communities form where people trust each other and where people know about what each other are interested in. You know, I have a friend, he knows what I'm interested in, sometimes he sends me, hey, check this out, right? So this should work kind of like that, but all the learning should be automatic. Going a little bit slowly, so I'll go over some details about the current learning algorithm a little bit quickly. I'll just give you the gist of it, okay? So each peer maintains some sort of profile of other peers. So as these exchanges go on, as you send queries, you get results, and so on, each peer tries to keep track of how good another peer is. And we do this with a simple matrix representation, where each peer keeps track of different terms for each other peer, okay, the ones that seem to be most important. And so, for example, if this guy sends the query llama to this guy, and this guy sends back some good results, then I might say, oh, those results look really good. For example, they look better than the one I got from others or from the ones that I got locally. So I'm going to boost up the weight that I associate with that peer and that particular term. And I can do this for each term in the query. And you can do this in different ways. This is a very simple reinforcement learning algorithm. And we're exploring different ones. But the idea is that there should be some simple way for you to learn about others. And then, once you have built a profile of other users, you should be able to say, okay, now I have a query with the word llama in it. Who would be a good peer to send that query to? And you look at what you've learned from prior interactions and say, oh, okay, this guy seems to have a good weight for this particular word, and combine different terms in the query and say, oh, okay, if you put them all together, it looks like this is the score of this peer, so let me send it to this peer. And you only send the query to a small number of peers so that you don't really flood the network with lots of traffic as would happen with GNUtella and other less scalable systems. Okay, yes?
I have a question about, I'm not familiar with peer-to-peer network. What's the incentive for people to actually?
Well, the incentive in this case would be that you might, if this works, right, you might get some good results that you perhaps wouldn't otherwise get from a centralized search engine. Because other users might know about you, they might, your system might know about a lot about your particular context, right? Your interests, your profiles, maybe you have different profiles.
It's not really something for the public, something for maybe a smaller...
I think that if this kind of approach works, it could be for the general public. But the point is that everybody would then work within a community that they are familiar with. I mean, for example, if I submit some mathematical term to Google that now I can't think of a good example. I should have thought about this in advance. But you get sort of the ranking based on the consensus. But if my peer knew, oh, Pierce, peer really probably knows something about this stuff, so I get his result, and that might actually be a useful thing. So that if that system works, that would be an incentive for people to use it. Of course, this is a research question.
Sorry, isn't there something against also the having the centralization in the hands of the big brother?
Sure, that would be possibly another reason to be interested in this kind of approach. I think search engines really work great right now. There are ethical, political issues, whether you might be scared of that or not. I think one important point here, and thank you because your question reminds me to mention it, is that in fact there's no reason why a big commercial search engine shouldn't be part of this system. I mean, I could imagine Google being one of these nodes and participating it for its own reasons. I mean, you could implement, for example, advertising as part of this, if that was the business model that could drive this. And then people might trust that source, because generally it's a very good source. But in some cases, I might get good results from other, more sort of community-driven peers. So some peers are going to be very popular, very central. Others are going to be very specific and very community related, and you could have the best of both worlds. And then if some point the big one starts not working so well, then hopefully you still have something else to rely on. So, yeah.
Oh, quick question. Does this bring up issues of privacy, because this is not
yes.
permission based?
Yes.
And the second thing is, I mean, this is offline, but is Scott Jones doing anything like this in the backside for improving the performance for the search engine?
Cha-cha. Yeah. Okay, so both good questions for the break. Scott Jones, we've talked very, very briefly with him because through this Data and Search Institute at Indiana University. Right now, we're not collaborating with him, but maybe that's a possibility in the future. And about the privacy issue, yes, this is a big research issue. And in fact, this is definitely something that we're looking at right now. We have we have a simple privacy policy where everything is anonymized. Your information is not visible to others unless you elect to. I'll show you later how. But the information does go over the internet. But this is the same way in which my queries go to Google. So there are risks and policies need to be developed, and we believe that you can deal with that. But it's certainly an important issue. certainly we could very easily shoot ourselves in the foot by being not careful about how we do this, certainly. If we did some mistake, you know, all of a sudden somebody sees everybody else with queries that they didn't intend to, yeah. So it's a delicate issue, very good point. So how do you evaluate this kind of thing? We've talked about evaluation yesterday a few times. As I mentioned, this is important to us. I don't have a lot of time. So very briefly, the first thing we did is simulations. And how to do this, we basically created synthetic users. We used the Open Directory Project, which is a large ontology of websites manually curated by volunteer editors. And we selected 500 topics from this ontology. And we said, OK, each of these topics corresponds to a user. So this is the user interested in Formula One car racing. This is the user interested in ice cream. We then used those URLs in the ODP as seeds for crawls, imagining that these were things that this user is interested in. And we also used the description of these resources in the ODP to form queries. And then these queries were randomly allocated to users. So somebody might ask about car racing, but maybe they were not the car racing expert. And the issue is, does the network evolve in such a way that the query can find itself, find its way to the right target? And clearly, what we would like to see here, I'm sorry, it's a little bit dark. We would like to see that two users that have more similar interests to each other should be more likely to talk to each other than two users that are not really that related to each other. And this is the reason why we use the ODP, because the ODP gives us an external sort of hierarchy that allows us to estimate the similarity between two users using something like Lane's measure that I talked about before, right? If they share a common parent like sports, you know, they're more related to each other than if one is under sports and the other one is under home cooking or something like that, right? Okay, so simulations allow us to say, all right, seems to work okay. As time goes by and more queries are sent, the peers learn about each other, the performance of the system goes up. This is precision at 10. It's a performance measure used in information retrieval. Also, we tried different learning algorithms, and more sophisticated learning algorithms work a little bit better, as expected. Like the one that I showed you earlier, that's the best. And then if you didn't use, well, a simpler version, I didn't go into the details, doesn't do as well. And then something really even simpler, like send a query to a random known peer, of course, doesn't do as well. So, you know, we have some validation that the system seems to work in a reasonable way. We also try to say, well, how about if you compare with this distributed system versus a centralized engine that had exactly the union of all the results from these peers? Would that work better? And we did that. Forget this line for a moment. And this is the version of success where it's actually distributed and queries get routed around. And this is the version where we took all of these peers and put them on a single server, and then the queries went to the server. And then, again, using precision recall, we found that the distributed system worked better. And that means that the peers could learn context, right? I mean, if that wasn't the case, there's no reason why this should work better than the centralized system. Centralized system should work better. But this tells us that, in fact, the context gives us something useful that we can leverage. Okay. So that because the queries didn't go to everybody, but they went only to certain peers, then you were able to get better results. We also tried to compare with Google, and Google seemed to do really poorly. But you have to consider that in our evaluation, in our simulation, we were using this ODP as the golden standard of relevance. And so we were discounting any results from Google that were not in the ODP set. And so, of course, that punished Google a lot. And you may think, well, that's not fair. So I don't care so much about that part. Okay. What happens if you look at the network? How does this network evolve? Well, you can look at, we've talked about small world topology, so I don't need to tell you what it's about. And the signature of a small world is a small diameter, like in a random network, but a high clustering coefficient. And in fact, if you monitor what happens to this network over time, we started out by a random topology. So you have, you know, a small clustering coefficient and a small diameter. As the time goes by, the diameter remains small, but the clustering coefficient increases a lot. Okay, and you can see that in this thing, we put similar peers near each other. And you can see that there's the same number of edges in this and this. But here, most of the edges are concentrated between peers that are related to each other. Okay, so that tells us that clusters evolve. Okay, it doesn't really tell us that the clusters are the right ones. So the next question is, let's look at who talks to whom. So what we did is we took snapshots as time went by, and for each snapshot we captured all the communications, and we saw that a particular query was going from a particular peer to another peer, okay? And we looked at the similarity between the peer and the peer that was receiving the query. We could do that because we formed the queries from the ODP, remember? So we knew what the query was about, and we knew what the user, what the peer knew about, and we wanted to see whether the peer were going towards a peer that were more related to the query. I mean, we build the simulation on purpose that way so that we could evaluate it. And in fact, it turns out that if you do a sort of a very simple routing algorithm where you just send to any known peer, even though you do have clusters, you don't have, the clusters don't reflect semantic similarity between, you know, they don't show that these clusters are semantic in a sense. But if you have like the reinforcement learning algorithm that I showed you earlier, we tried two versions of it, in fact, with time, the queries do go towards the peer that know more about those peers, about those queries. So that's a very reassuring argument. And just to visualize it up, we basically ran a clustering algorithm, a hierarchical clustering algorithm, over snapshots of the network over time, and we looked at the clusters that formed. And so you can see, so things in the same cluster means that these peers talk to each other much more than they talked with other peers, okay? And you get results that make sense. I mean, you know, the peer about birth control talked to the guy about midwifery and pregnancy, okay? Or, you know, fashion and footwear talk to each other. And cancer and loss and bereavement talk to each other. So it seems that even with very crude learning algorithms, you can get some interesting semantics that emerge from these local interactions with other peers. And we're very excited about that. Okay, so what's going on right now? We want to look at better algorithms that improve coverage and diversity in the query routing algorithms. We want to deal with the issue of trust and reputation. And we also want to do evaluation based on actual use of the system. What I showed you right now is simulations. And in fact, we right now have a study that is going on. So if you would go to that URL that I showed you earlier, you can actually volunteer to use it. It's actually pretty cool. It works nicely. I mean, you know, it's not Google yet. But we need more of you to get better. And this is some sort of analysis of early use, like from the first few weeks, just 30 or 40 users, sort of mostly local to the IU community. And so you can see, you know, we really don't have enough users. We need more. So please go download it. It's cool. It works. You basically click one click. It builds the index by itself, or you can customize it any way you want. And then it just runs in the background. You don't even know it's there. Even if you don't use it, you're part of the network and other peers are using you. It's nicely customizable. It respects your privacy, blah, 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 blah. And if you agree to participate in the, you can download the regular version or you can participate in the user study. If you participate in the user study, then you download a version that actually sends us some information that we can track for research purposes. Of course, there's no personally identifiable information, but we can see, you know, how much people are using it, how many queries they're submitting, et cetera, et cetera. And so, for example, we can, and this is an analysis of, as I said, the first few weeks. This is the network of queries, where the queries are going. So big node means they're sending more queries, and big edges means more queries are being sent between those two nodes. And interestingly, look here, there's this big guy, fat guy, labeled Yahoo. Well, we cheated, okay? We took one peer, and without telling anyone, we said, you know what? This peer is not a real peer. What it's doing, it's sending the queries to a search engine API and then just returning the answers from the API. We wanted to see whether a large commercial scale search engine would, in fact, be identified as a central node in this network. This is what we would like to see. And this happened. This was the node with the most traffic and it was very central. So people learned that it was a reliable node. And then this is the result network. So how results are routed from one peer to another. And this is directly. We're not looking at the intermediate steps, but just the originator of the result and the final target. And Yahoo is not really the largest, the one that provided the most results, but it's the second. And And so that's also reassuring. Again, this is very small. It's based on, you know, 30 or some users. I think that to really see the potential of a system like this, you need to scale up to lots of numbers. That also will tell us how the networking algorithms work. We think right now, this is based on Juxt, an open source peer-to-peer framework. We think right now it works pretty well. The response of the system is pretty quick. Of course, there is a delay. Okay, it's not like search engine, don't get your answers in 1/10 of a second. You get it in, you know, 2 or 3 seconds. But still, we think it's acceptable. And then if you elect to, in your privacy setting, then your some of the information about you will be sent to a central server that just visualizes it as a toy, visualizes it the last 100 queries in the system. And, you know, BigQuery is one that has lots of pages indexed, and then you can look at yourself and see, oh, wow, I'm quite central and stuff like that. So this is sort of like a toy, hoping that we'll get people interested in participating. Okay, I'm sorry I went a couple of minutes over, but I'm happy to take questions.